Please be seated.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I want to invite you to open up in your New Testament to Acts chapter 17. Acts chapter 17. It'll be a little bit before we get there. But that'll be among the first passages that we look at this morning. In our study this morning, I want us to talk about something that we all have some experience with. Not all of us have the same amount of experience with it. And as you'll see in just a moment, that's not exactly possible, but we all have some experience. For example, someone like Randy Robin has a lot more experience with what we're going to talk about this morning than I do. And yet, Chris Robin has a lot less experience with what we're going to talk about. What we're going to talk about this morning is time. Randy's been around a lot longer than me. I've been around a lot longer than Chris. You just look around and you can see those ratios all over the place in this auditorium. Now, I doubt I have to tell you that time management is one of those hot topics in our world today. All you have to do is look at the number of books that have been written on that particular subject. When I searched Barnes & Noble, just to kind of get a feel for it, it came back with more than 7,000 different results that have to do with time management. And so whatever else you want to say about it, there's been a lot of material written on this particular subject. And yet when I look at what is said in the Bible, it's interesting to me that it doesn't really deal with this subject in a direct way all that frequently. In fact, I'm somewhat surprised by the relatively small number of passages that address the use of time in comparison with, say, the number of passages that deal with our use of money or material possessions. There are dozens of passages that deal with things like wealth, and there are very few that deal with, you know, how we use our time. And the fact that I'm surprised by that might have something to do with the fact that as a society, we have become obsessed with time. And we expect that the teaching of the Bible is going to place the same kind of emphasis on a subject that we might place upon that. And of course, the fact that the Bible doesn't approach this subject as often as, you know, we might think it would doesn't necessarily mean that it's an unimportant topic or that it doesn't address it at all. It simply means that it approaches it in a different way than maybe the latest bestseller on time management. And so in our study this morning, I want us to look at a few things that are said in Scripture about time. And I don't mean by that we're going to go back and look at the fact that time, as we know it's part of this creation or anything like that. That's not what we're going to do. We're going to look at it from more of a practical angle this morning. And in order for us to do that, I really want us to just ask a couple of questions about things. And so the first thing that I want us to talk about when it comes to time, are we masters or are we stewards? You know, if we're honest, we have to admit that we have a tendency to view time as something that it belongs to us. For example, when we consider spending time in some activity, what we typically do is we contemplate how much of our time we're willing to spend in a particular activity. And even when it comes to our responsibilities, we may recognize that we have them. We know that we have these responsibilities, but we still look at these things as things that take up our time. Isn't that true? If we're not careful, this mindset will affect practically every aspect of our lives, and that includes the time we spend in our service to God. What happens, for example, when things like congregational activities or when congregational work conflicts with other activities? What often happens is that people make a choice about what they're going to do with their time. And even our regular worship services and our Bible classes sometimes are pretty thin because people choose to do other things with their time. And the answer to problems like that, at least according to many people in our world, is not to call upon people to put the Lord first, to make sure that He is the one we serve above all else, but rather to maybe just lower the bar somewhat. Came across an article, really a number of years ago at this point, that was just, it was attention grabbing. It says, the title said, Church Guarantees, quote, Express Service for Busy Believers. And it's an article out of Florida, and it was the preacher of the Family Bible Church in Eustis, Florida. He said he noticed that work schedules and family plans were just keeping people from attending. And so they decided they were going to put out on the sign in front of the building this message: Express worship, 45 minutes, guaranteed. And when interviewed about this, the preacher said, you know, so many people are in a time crunch, but they don't want to leave the Lord out. And one of the members, and this was my favorite, you don't feel like you're spending all day in church, you know. And I bet I can make 45 minutes seem like a lot longer just by my preaching. I get that. What does that mean, though, when you look at those quotes? What it means is that many people don't want serving God to take up too much of their time. And I recognize that the amount of time spent in worship doesn't really tell us whether or not it's pleasing to God. I mean, you can spend a long time doing things that are not pleasing to Him. I get that. And I get that the longer or the more often that you engage in things doesn't necessarily mean the more spiritual the activities are. I get that as well. But let me ask you, what do you suspect the motive is in that sort of thing? Is it because people are so eager to go out and serve God in other ways? Or, you know, that they, let's just limit it here so we can go and serve the Lord in other places? Or is it because they're simply more interested in doing other things with, again, their time? I think we know which one of those is predominantly the case, often the motive. Now, I've been using a very specific example this morning, but this mindset is one that can affect us in all kinds of ways. Can there be any doubt that a lesson dealing with the fact that time is something that we've been entrusted with, not something that is inherently ours, is a much-needed lesson in our world today, especially in a society like the one in which we live? Do you think it would help us to recognize that we are, in fact, stewards and that we're not masters when it comes to the time that we spend on this earth, that that's really how that is in reality? No doubt that would be handy for us to understand. You know, we need to be clear about the fact that time is something with which we have been entrusted. When the Apostle Paul, for example, preached in the city of Athens here in Acts chapter 17, in verse 25, it says that he pointed out to these folks that God gives to all mankind, life and breath and everything. In other words, the only reason any of us are here, the only reason we spend any time whatsoever in this world, is because God gave us life and He gave us everything that is necessary in order to sustain it. But let me ask you this. When Paul said that God gave us all of these things, did he mean that God gave them to us just so, you know, we can go about and do what we want? Just live your life to the fullest, you know, do those things that are interesting to you. Or did he mean by that he gave us all of these things so that we could live in keeping with his will and bring honor and glory to him? You know, when you continue to look at what Paul said there in Acts chapter 17, the very next verse, he says that he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place. And here's why, verse 27, that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way toward him and find him. Now, he's talking about the Gentile world, but still, the point's the same. The point was a search for God. Now, I want you to think a moment about what we read in other places. Go back to Ecclesiastes chapter 12 for just a moment, to the very end of the book, chapter 12. As you come to the end of this book, this is one of the last things you read. Verse 13, the end of the matter. Okay, I always love it when they give you the conclusion. What have you been talking about, you know, prior to this? The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. And the end of that verse literally says, this is the whole of man. This is what it's all about, in other words. One translation says, fear God and obey his commandments, for this is what it means to be human. It's what God created us for. That's what we're here for. And that's why Paul would talk about the fact that God gave us life and breath and everything. That's what he gave us these things for. Now, I'm not saying that God doesn't want us to enjoy life, so don't misunderstand what I'm saying this morning, because he certainly does. In fact, when you look through the book of Ecclesiastes, it has a lot to say about the fact that we ought to enjoy life. Go back to chapter 2, for example, in verse 24. And Solomon says, there is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God, for apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? God wants us to enjoy things. But what I'm trying to say this morning is that when it comes to time, the time that we've been given, we're not masters. We are stewards. And we recognize that a steward is someone who actually is responsible for managing something that belongs to somebody else, something that has been entrusted to him by the true owner, by the master. And as Christians, we recognize we belong to Christ. And Paul said in Galatians 5 and verse 24 that those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. What he meant by that is that our will has been set aside. We live for the will of someone else. We live for his will rather than our own. And that applies to the way that we use our time just as much as it does to anything else we might want to talk about. We are stewards and not masters. And so let's ask another question. When it comes to time, are we wise or foolish? It's interesting to me that there are at least a couple of passages in the Bible that address the subject of time that also do so in light of the concept of wisdom. And one of those passages is in Psalm 90, if you want to take just a moment to go there. Psalm 90. And this is actually a psalm of Moses. We are, you know, more familiar with the Psalms of David, but Moses wrote this particular psalm. And it says in Psalm 90 in verse 10, Moses says, the years of our life are 70, or even by reason of strength, 80. Yet their span is but toil and trouble. They are soon gone, and we fly away. And then a couple of verses later, actually skip one verse, go to verse 12. Moses says this, so teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom. When we look at what Moses says here, we might be tempted to think, well, he's describing people who live a good long life. That's not really what Moses is doing here when he says what he says here. He was actually making a statement about the brevity of life in this passage. And that becomes clear when you look at the context. Look at verse 1. Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations, before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world. From everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You return man to dust and say, return, O children of man, for 1,000 years in your sight are but as yesterday when it is past, or as a watch in the night. You sweep them away as with the flood. They are like a dream, like grass that is renewed in the morning. In the morning it flourishes and is renewed. In the evening it fades and withers. He's talking about something that is not going to last real long. He's pointing out the brevity of life here. Now, when a lot of people look at the numbers Moses gave for the typical length of life, they may think to themselves, well, that seems like a long time. That's how it works when you're really young. You think that seems like a long time. And many people would look at it that way. But Moses, when he talks about this, he says, you know, we are soon gone. And we fly away. I think we also need to point out that even though Moses talked about a person's life consisting of 70 or perhaps even 80 years, he's not given a guarantee there. We recognize that. He was speaking in general terms. And just as there are people who live well past 80, there are also many people whose lives come to an end long before 70. There are no guarantees when it comes to the length of life, is there? And no matter how you look at it, life is brief. That's what James would say. James 4 and verse 14. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Mist by its nature is not long-lasting. And yet, how many people do you think go through life without giving much thought to the fact that it's going to come to an end someday? There are people who don't seem to take that into consideration. I mean, we all know that it will. But many people simply choose to not think about that, or choose not to live in a way that is consistent with that fact. You know, for many people, that is so far removed from now that I won't really worry about that yet. And basically what that says is many people take life for granted. And they do that despite the fact that it's brief. And yet the scriptures teach us to approach life differently, to approach it wisely. and especially in light of that brevity. And that's what Moses had in mind there in Psalm 90 and verse 12 when he said to the Lord, teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom. Teach us to recognize that we're not going to be here forever and to approach life in light of that fact. And so we can ignore that this life was going to come to an end someday, but choosing to ignore that doesn't prevent it from taking place. You may have noticed that. It does, however, keep people from doing whatever they need to do in order to get right with God before it takes place. You know, the writer of Hebrews would say in Hebrews 9 and verse 27 that people are appointed to die once and then to face judgment. And it is unwise not to live our lives with that fact in view. You ever heard someone talk about the fact that, you know, life's too short for this or life's too short for that, you know, and it doesn't matter what it is. People say it with all kinds of things. There are a lot of different life is too short statements that people have come up with. Some of them are meant to be funny. Life's too short, eat dessert first, you know, stuff like that. But others are more serious. And what I want you to understand this morning is that life is too short to live without God. Doesn't matter how long you live, life's too short to live without Him. Number your days. Live with a heart of wisdom. Another passage that addresses the subject of time and does so in the context of wisdom is found in the New Testament. Go to Ephesians chapter 5 for a moment, if you will. Ephesians chapter 5. In verse 15 of Ephesians 5, Paul says this. He says, look carefully then how you walk. He's not talking about putting one foot in front of the other, but how you progress through life. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Another translation puts it this way, making the best use of your time because the times are evil. And one thing I think is implied in those words is that if we're going to walk as wise people and make the best use of our time, that's not going to be accidental. It's not going to be something that just happens as we go about just living, you know, without thinking about things or without a purpose for things. Have you ever noticed that no one accidentally makes the best use of their time? No one's ever done that. That's not how that works. In fact, Paul seems to suggest that we have a lot of things going against us in that regard. I wonder if that's what he was getting at when he talked about making the best use of your time because the times are evil. Whether or not that's what Paul meant, I'll tell you what, it's true all the same. There are things that work against us making the best use of our time. I'm not sure we always recognize that like we should, but it's true. And it seems to me that we're sometimes guilty of two mistaken assumptions. First, we believe that we have really there's kind of the right to do what we want to do. And also, second, that we believe that there's a way for us to do everything we want to do. And we suspect that if there's a problem somewhere, it's merely a matter of scheduling or, you know, organization or efficiency. You know, you can get it all done, do everything you want to do. And what we need to come to terms with is the fact that our society offers up more possibilities than we can pursue without shortchanging some of the things that are more important in life. That's just a fact. You can go out and do all kinds of things that don't have anything to do with your God-given responsibilities, and you can't even get all those done. I mean, there's just more out there that you can do and without, you know, shortchanging something that is right and good. And yet, is there any doubt that we sometimes, that sometimes happens with people, that they when they, you know, are looking to make cuts somewhere along the way, what is it that gets cut out? Is it not many times what would otherwise go to serving the Lord and doing things that are helpful to others? Is that many times what gets cut out of the schedule? And so we have to ask ourselves, I think, do we lack self-discipline when it comes to our activities? You know, we are a society that believes that being on the go always is always the right answer. And what we have to ask is, does the word sacrifice ever enter our minds when we contemplate what we're going to do or what we're not going to do? And what Paul was saying in these verses that we read just a moment ago, at least by implication, is that the wise person uses time to the fullest possible advantage. And it's not simply a matter of choosing what is good over what is inherently evil. You see, that's the catch. We know there are some things that would be wrong to spend our time on. We get that. That's not the only part of the equation. It's not just a matter of choosing what is good over what is inherently evil. In order for us to be wise, and I think that's maybe why this word is used, to be wise in our use of time, we need to learn to choose between what is best over something even that is good. That's a little bit harder, isn't it? But that's what the wise person does. Paul wasn't talking about making good use of your time. He was talking about, as he says, making the best use of your time. And there's a difference. You know, there may be many inequities in this world. Not everyone has the same abilities. Not everyone has the same opportunities. Not everyone has the same resources with which to work. Not all of us will live the same number of years. But one thing we all have in common is that God has entrusted to us the same amount of time each day. Each of us has been given 24 hours in a day, and those hours are comprised of 60 minutes, and those minutes are comprised of 60 seconds. And the question that we have to ask ourselves is, how are we going to use them? Or to put it another way, how are we going to live our lives? The author John Boykin said, "Time is life, nothing more, nothing less. The way you spend your hours and your days is the way you spend your life." We need to take that into consideration. And so when it comes to the end of life and someone says, you know, how did you spend your time? We all want to be able to say, well, you know what? I watched a lot of television. Watched all kinds of stuff. Or we don't want to say, you know, I saw almost every sporting event that was worth watching and many that were not. Because that's how it goes, frankly. Someone says, what did you do for the Lord with your time? We want to be able to say more than, well, you know, I was at services sometimes. And hey, that's a great start. But we want to do more than that. We want to be able to say, with a heart of wisdom, I made the best use of my time. Don't you want to be able to say that when it's all over? When you come to the end of your days? The problem with so many people is they don't think about the fact that that's how they want to answer till they get to the end of their days. It's long past the possibility of doing something about it. Don't let that be you. There may be some here this morning who've never obeyed the gospel of Christ. We want to encourage you to do that this morning if you haven't. You know, when the Apostle Paul had the opportunity to discuss things like righteousness and self-control and the judgment to come with the governor Felix in Acts chapter 24, do you remember how Felix responded to him? He said, "Go away for the present, and when I get an opportunity, I will summon you." Another translation says, "When I find time, I will send for you again." Well, here's the thing. Felix never found time. He didn't find the time to make his life right. And very few people do who choose not to make time for the things that are most important. So don't wait until you find the time to do what's right. Take the time this morning to respond to the Lord's invitation to do what you're supposed to do so that you can be right with Him. And that when all is said and done, when this life is over, whether it's short or long or somewhere in between, you can hear the words, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Don't you want to hear that when you stand before the Lord? It's something we have to plan for. If we can help you in some way this morning to be right with Him, we ask you to come as we stand and as we sing.